Hi, I'm William Bolton, and this is Liam Rice.
Hello.
Welcome to the Journalism Today podcast from the Media Innovation Studio at the University of Central Lancashire. This podcast is the place where you'll find the liveliest journalists, the smartest academics, and maybe even the most hardworking students talking about the future of journalism. Today, we're looking at the issues of trust and representation in the sporting media landscape, focusing particularly on football journalism.
But what do we mean by these two key words, representation and trust? By representation, we mean the level of coverage that lower league football club teams get in the national media. By trust, we're looking at the relationship between football clubs, particularly their managers and the media.
So without further ado, today's podcast will run as follows. So to begin with, we had a chat with Will Moorcroft, commentator, media and communications officer for Salford City FC. He'll give us a bit of an insight into what it's like in the media teams of these non-league teams.
Next off, we sat down with the Journalism Today team just for a little bit of a chat.
And finally, we sat down with Ali Maxwell, presenter and producer of Not the Top 20 and lover of all things Football League, who provides some absolutely fantastic insight into the issues we're going to be discussing today.
So let's get the ball rolling. As we know, first of all, we spoke to Will Moorcroft. He'll provide a bit of an insight into what it's like inside a football club. A club in 2014, Salford City, there was a 50% stake takeover by the former Manchester United Football Club players Gary Neville, Phil Neville, Paul Scholes, Ryan Giggs and Nicky Butt, together with billionaire businessman Peter Lim.
So let's get cracking, let's hear from him. So this is Will Moorcroft, and we started off by asking him about his role at Salford City Football Club.
Yes, I'm the club's commentator and media and communications officer, so I oversee the putting together and publishing the match day programme, the website, a lot of social media, and obviously on match days as the commentator, just bring the game to anyone who wants to listen, really, and then that gets used on highlights afterwards.
Do you think there's been, before they took charge and came into the club, do you think there's been like a difference in like the media focus on the club?
Definitely. I think since we've been here, can say that there has. Obviously, with them themselves, there was a national interest, and then things like the FA Cup run that we had in their second season put us in the national spotlight. The documentary obviously helped as well, and that's now expanded into, for example, America and Canada on Netflix, which opens up a whole new host of interested people. So, the interest in the club's growing exponentially. You can see that with the increase in social media followings, and it's just grown massively. A lot more people starting to recognise who we are and follow the journey, and it's not just far afield either. It's a lot more people in Salford now aware of who we are who might not have even known that Salford had its own club. It's been absolutely massive over the last 4 or 5 years.
So during your time as the media and communications officer, has there not been any point at which the relationship between the media and the club, whether it be the manager Graham Alexander or his predecessors, there is never a time where it's become strained? There's never been a time where there's been a story out there which you perceive to have been, there's a lack of respect almost?
No, there's been nothing internal. I think we've always been very fortunate. We had a very close and strong relationship with Graham's predecessors in John O'Byrne. We had our systems and we worked very well with them. Graham's come in and he's a very different type of manager. He's come from, a league background where he's been in the professional game for so long. But again, we've got a very close relationship. We know what we can talk about, and I think the boundaries are there. We know where not to cross the line. But it's the same sort of thing, really. We work from a club perspective, so there are certain messages that we wouldn't want to put out anyway, whereas for example, a more neutral outlet may want to pursue certain lines that we wouldn't, which Hayes Graham deals with those on his own. He's very experienced and he knows what he wants to say as much as we know what we want published. So I've got a very good understanding and working relationship.
So do you work very closely with him then, in your role?
In what sense at the club?
As part of your role, I take it that you conduct post-match manager interviews and so on and so forth. How closely do you work with him outside of that?
Only really as when we need to. I deal with him for the programme notes, which he does for every game.
Yeah.
And on occasion we'll do pre-match press conferences. And then otherwise it's just as the situation dictates, really. I mean, there's no need to be constantly asking the manager for comments and quips. I think from respect to that, we only speak to him when we feel we need to.
See, that's really, really interesting for what we're investigating, because we're looking at issues of media over scrutiny, just in the football landscape in general, and it's really interesting that you speak to him as and when you need to. So unlike maybe at Premier League or Championship level, where there's a pre-match press conference, there's a post-match press conference, pre-match interview, post-match interview, do you think that as Salford, inevitably, in my opinion, and I assume you share the same opinion, as Salford progress through the leagues, do you think that might become an issue for you with just an overzealous media scrutiny, particularly with the ownership as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of different points in that. Start off with the manager one again. It's that battle between internal communications, i.e. what the club wants and external. We did actually play with the idea of doing pre-match press conferences this season for the first time.
Mm.
I think what we found is, particularly looking from our supporters, is there wasn't a massive interest in there, really. So for us, we found, well, are we doing this out of we're getting great little nuggets of content, or are we doing this out of routine, really?
Mm.
And it sort of fell into the latter as routine. So we thought, is there any point in doing this, you know? So we've decided just to do it when there's a big need to do it, really. So this weekend we've got Marine and the FA Cup fourth qualifying rounds, and it's the first round that we're in the competition. So, you know, it's unique. It's something that we'd like to give some build up to. Therefore, we think the situation and the timing's right to do one. Whereas, you know, for league games, I think particularly because of the intensity at which the National League is played at, you can end up playing two games a week. You got more than enough time to speak to the manager about the next game during the previous game, because you've got a couple of days in between. So it saves everyone's time, really. And particularly if they're reading the same things, you know, oh yeah, the squad's in great shape, they're training really hard. There's nothing that's particularly, you know, inspiring in there. And if anything, it can be giving information to the other team on another level. So we don't feel the need to. At the same time, if somebody approaches them and says they'd like to speak to the manager, then we'll put that to him and see if he'd like to. You know, if he feels that it's something that we can do, then, you know, we're happy to facilitate that. But just needs to be worthwhile, really. That's the thing we do. We're not going to waste time doing mundane press conferences when there's nothing to say. On the other side, what you say about overzealous media scrutiny, etc. I suppose Adam Rooney's been quite a good example, because coming down from Aberdeen, obviously that attracted a lot of attention. I'll be honest, I think in his first 2-3 months here, I've probably dealt with more press requests than ever before in such a short space of time. You know, there's a lot of focus on Adam, and I suppose what's important about our job, all right, that's fair enough, but it's also about sharing it around, because, you know, we're not just about Adam. We've got another 20-odd players in the squad. You know, some of them, your Danny Lloyd, your Rory Gaffney's, they've come from League One clubs, so, you know, it's not the only big player, and it's about spreading that awareness around. Obviously, if it's a Scottish paper, you've only got an interest in Adam, and there's no point saying, yeah, you can't speak to Adam, but speak to so-and-so instead. that makes no sense. But, you know, when it's down to us, you know, we'll try and share it out amongst the squads and just make sure that everyone's getting a fair shout, really.
So, yeah, obviously, just going back to the thing where you say there's quite a big spotlight with the documentary, with the FA Cup run, with Adam Rooney. Would you say that the club is maybe perhaps a big fish in, like, a small media pond? Like, do you think the clubs at your level at the moment get so much attention as you do?
I mean, again, like, there's a lot of different ways to look at this. We do get a lot of comments that it's the BBC media darlings, they're Sky's darlings, they're going to be the BT darlings, etc. Interestingly enough, I think if we look at our media and relations, yes, we've had those. We've been very fortunate to have the documentary on BBC and Sky. But I think match to match, what you find in comparison to the likes of Leighton Orient, Hartlepool, Wrexham, match-to-match media coverage, they probably get a lot more because they're big clubs, they've still got massive followings, and they've got connections with a lot of established papers, and particularly their own local papers. I think you look at Harrogate, they've got a good relationship with BBC Radio Yorkshire. We don't have the same with Radio Manchester. We feature from time to time in the non-league segment, but we don't get that. And you have to put it into a longer-term perspective. You know, three shows on the BBC plus two FA Cup games. Okay, that's amazing. But, you know, match to match, there's probably a lot of other clubs who've got far better media coverage than ourselves.
Right. So, generally then, would you actually say that even though you have got that coverage and other clubs have also got that sort of other coverage, would you say that generally you are misrepresented, or the level you're at, like all the National League and League Two and even below that, would you say that they aren't represented properly in the national media?
What way are you coming out? Represented in a national spotlight or in a club spotlight?
In the sense of almost column inches as well as TV and radio coverage. So you look at, if you want to find out the results of, say, a championship game, and you're reading the Times, for instance, you might have a page like a championship roundup, and then you'd have another page split in two for a League One and League Two. But then you find that non-league there's not much to be found in a national sense. In a local sense, there is, of course, but in a national sense, there's not much there. Do you think that given the amount of fans there are in the National League, I mean, we're talking hundreds of thousands, as I'm sure you're well aware, that follow the National League, and yet there's not much there in terms of a national presence.
No, I think nationally, obviously, you know, there probably is more of an interest, and that comes back to the owners. You know, there's a lot of media presence on them. You know, what's Gary Neville doing, what's Ryan Giggs doing, what's Paul Scholes doing, etc. And I think that's a lot where it comes from. If you look at, I think when we have featured nationally, I mean, John Richardson from the Sunday Mirror was down at our last game. And I noticed there was a page in the Sunday Mirror. But otherwise, nationally, I think if you look at a lot of the stories about us, it tends to be when the owners are involved. For example, the launch of the stadium, which is knocking on a year ago now.
Yeah, we're throwing out, wasn't it?
There was a national interest in that. And when the stadium was opened, again, it was a national interest, but that's on the back of the owners, it's not necessarily the club. I think, wider speaking, I'm of the opinion that the National League probably doesn't get as much as it should do, because of the 24 teams, maybe 20 are professional outfits. You know, the level of football is very good, it's very strong. And I don't think people realise quite how good it is. You know, and again, it comes back to it, there's some massive clubs in the division: Hartlepool, Orient, Chesterfield, Wrexham. You know, they're massive clubs. So I think my opinion is that there should be a lot more coverage given to the league. But nationally, probably, yeah, we do get more than most. It'd just be nice that at some point when that becomes the club and not about the owners.
So that was Will Moorcroft from Salford City Football Club, and you're listening to the Journalism Today podcast. Those final comments from Will, they really hit the nail on the head, didn't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think for somebody who holds the role that he does, he regularly has contact with these managers and with the press, and for him to say that right at the end was really quite something. Yeah, absolute chuff that we had that interview with him. It was really, really insightful.
So now let's turn our attention to the chat we had with the editorial team at Journalism Today.
So we're going to discuss the idea of grassroots sports and the black hole that currently exists with regard to the top 20 clubs not being represented in football.
What exactly is the problem?
The problem seems to be that in newspaper coverage and broadcasting coverage, there is nothing currently there about teams below the top 20, so below the Premier League.
And why do you think that's happened?
I would say that the globalisation of news and how accessible it is to sort of watch and follow other leagues has definitely played a big impact on this, because lots of people are interested in football but only in the sort of highest levels, highest quality of football, so they might not really follow football outside of Champions League and the top clubs. So for them, they would be interested in the top UK clubs, the top Spanish clubs, the top German clubs, the top Italian clubs possibly, but not anything lower than that.
What you say about globalisation I think is key. I think in 1992, that's the turning point when Sky took over and made it the Premier League rather than Division 1. So once that happened, that's when you've got this massive commercial interest in top flight football and moving away from looking at the whole pyramid.
Did you say the schedule's quite demanding?
It is now, yeah. You've literally got, for the Premier League clubs and the clubs that compete in Europe, 24/7, Monday to Sunday, every day, there is something happening. There'll be a game. So.
And it's just squeezed out all the grassroots.
And do you think that people are kind of accessing this information just not in those big hitting places? So places like, I don't know, football blogs, local newspapers, streaming sites, stuff like that. And it's just the fact that, you know, maybe Championship football makes sense for a continent to look at, but, you know, Preston North End maybe doesn't.
If you want to access it, you have to look for it. And I think that's what the difference is now these days.
So is it being covered, though? I think that's the point. Like, is it actually being covered as a journalistic topic? Is it a genuine news hole? Or is it just an amplification issue?
There is no room. There is no room for the lower league clubs to be covered. Even though there is demand, there's tens of thousands of people that turn out every week for the Championship. Like, Leeds United to fill out the stadium is 35,000 every week, and yet the amount of column inches that they get is infinitesimal compared to what Burnley get, who fill out their 15,000 stadium every week because they're in the Premier League. So
that sanitisation, do you think that's linked to this notion of lack of plurality and it being the same voices?
Absolutely, because with the voices, it's always the same people. It's your Jonathan Norcroft, Henry Winter, and in the journalism sphere, and then it's the same ex-players as well. It's always Gary Neville, it's always Rio Ferdinand, Alan Shearer, Graham Souness. It's always these same people, and their niche is always in the Premier League. There's very rarely anybody on TV or writing comment pieces in the media who weren't in a top Premier League side, because it seems to me that there's just, although there's interest from the public, as the not the top 20 broadcast demonstrates, because of how much viewing time that they are getting from their audience, compared to what other pieces of like articles have.
And it sounds like the sheer structure of that interplay between those characters and the news is also kind of increasingly a concern. Just with you're saying about the access to players, the Southgate model.
Yeah,
what can you tell us about that?
The Southgate model. So instead of having that trudge of a routine, you have all 23 players, the whole squad, all the coaching staff, every single person associated with the team in a room, all sat round a nice little table like we are now, and then all the journalists would pile in, and then they'd all go to each player. They'd have 5 minutes. There'd be an hour, and they'd have 5 minutes of each person, and they'd switch around and go to the next person. And as a result, the coverage was much better across national papers, across TV, across radio. They were playing darts together. They were doing bowling. There was just an intimacy there that is just lacking. And as you can see with what Mourinho has been coming out with recently, especially after the Newcastle defeat on Saturday, well, Newcastle victory on Saturday, which is even bigger, arguably, he's come out and said that it's a man. He's being manhunted. The respect for him and his family is a disgrace. And there's several managers you can point out over the years who that's happened to.
So that was the editorial team who gave us some fresh insight into this episode of Journalism Today. Next up, Ali Maxwell, producer and presenter of Not the Top 20 podcast.
Yeah, so we're going to talk to Ali about issue, given his standing within the industry, we're going to be talking to Ali about issues regarding why he believes that clubs, well, whether he believes that clubs outside the top 20 are underreported, his personal experience with football managers, how intimate is that relationship, and whether the media shows enough respect to them, and is the need for a damning, maybe eye-catching headline over proper insight. But first off, we started off by asking him about his decision to set up Not the Top 20.
Myself and George Ellick set up the Not the Top 20 podcast to cover exclusively the three EFL divisions back in the first half of 2016, so just as the 2015-16 season was coming to an end. I think our main motivations, we considered that there was a slight gap in the market. Podcasting was getting more and more popular, and that was clear to see for those of us who listened to podcasts, as we both did. But I think the wider media still hadn't quite clocked on to how popular these were becoming and how quickly they were growing in popularity. Now, there was one EFL podcast at the time, the We Are Going Up podcast. It was very good. It was very popular. And when we set up, it was still going. We didn't actually know, but it was on its last legs. So in terms of gap in the market, I don't necessarily think we almost cynically thought, oh, well, we'll get a lot of listeners for this because there isn't something similar. We didn't really look at it like that. We looked at it like we were young in our early 20s. We had ambitions in broadcasting, in that industry, in our careers, but neither of us were in a job at the time which gave us any sort of practice to allow us to improve as broadcasters. And so we took matters into our own hands, and that's why the podcast format was so perfect. Not only did we listen to and enjoy many podcasts, we knew that the platform was growing, so we did know that there was potential there. I personally don't think that clubs outside the top 20 are massively underreported in the British media. I think that in terms of mainstream media, there's a lot that can be done to improve the quality of coverage. And so perhaps that would be a more apt criticism of the media when it comes to the EFL and to teams outside of the Premier League, is the quality of reporting. But absolutely, I think that a lot of the main TV channels, a lot of the main radio stations do cover the EFL, and that if you support a team in League 2, you will be able to hear or find, obviously, live updates of your games. That's not even scratching the surface of what local media do. Every single EFL club will have at least one dedicated local news outlet, and these guys, again, pour a lot of time and a lot of effort into reporting on these teams. So I'm not sure it's fair to say that these clubs are underreported. As much as I'm invested in the EFL, you have to understand that the Premier League is the top level of English football and therefore will attract most of the coverage. That would be the same across all sport, across any way of life, really, that generally the very top level of anything will be the most reported. So I do think that, as I said, that the quality of the reporting, the quality of the content surrounding the EFL has been very low in the past and is growing in quality slowly. And I'm not just saying that because of our podcast. That is part of a real growing sense in the last few years that, yes, these leagues can be analysed in the same way that the Premier League can be. Yes, there is an appetite for in-depth analysis, not just your standard match report, but actually tactical insight, thoughts on manager style and philosophy. And of course, we're seeing that there's a real interest in the young talent in the EFL as well, given that 17 out of the 23 players in the England World Cup squad had played in the EFL at the start of their career, whether that be on loan or in many cases as a youngster of an EFL side. So there is a sense that the talent is there and there's a real interest, as there always has been, in the most talented young players. But I also think that more and more people are looking down at the Championship especially and finding a league that is different each year, different teams challenging different players and managers, sparkling. And I think that for a lot of fans of Premier League teams, that's a nice antidote to the Premier League, which generally sees much less competitiveness, the same teams towards the top end, and the same reality for any team not in the top six, which is essentially in your own mini league. The relationship between the media and managers can be quite difficult. We have not found any problems with anyone that we've spoken to on the podcast, but I think the key thing to remember is the circumstances of the interview. In our cases, our interviews have been set up through the manager, through a club, or through an agent of some sort, and these are voluntary appearances from whoever we're talking to. So instantly, the relationship between yourself and your interviewee is slightly different. I think that we see a lot of difficulty with the relationship between media and managers, because certainly in terms of the local journalists and the managers, there's such a close relationship, and it's a daily relationship. And I believe that in many cases, the managers would rather do much less talking to the media and on a much less intense basis. But unfortunately, they are obliged to talk to the media, whatever it is, three times a week, pre-game, post-game, maybe one in the middle of the week as well. So I think that that relationship very much differs from what we've been able to do with managers. We've always found that they've been very open, very happy to discuss with us. And we try and ask slightly different questions. We're less interested, I guess, in the short-term headline stuff. We're always interested in their background, their philosophies, how they set up their team, more tactical analysis, I suppose. So our experience with football managers has been very good, and it's a wonderful thing when you feel like you're getting answers from them that moves away from cliche, that moves away from the feeling that this is something they're obliged to do. And that's where I think the dynamic between a manager and, for example, a local journalist, they have very clear remit, they have very clear KPIs, I suppose, from their publication to attract more readers, to write copy that people are going to want to read. And as we know, in the modern time, that can lend itself to looking for the sensational more often. And that is always going to cause problems when, on the other side of the fence, you have a manager who understands that that his team's performance can be affected by media noise, any sort of criticism in the media, and anything sensational about his side in the media. So it's almost like a battle to find a balance, and that's where I think the problem goes. I don't particularly think that it'll be easy to restore that, because I don't imagine that the dynamic will change anytime soon. So I think that it's always going to be this sort of give and take, and in some cases that is going to be difficult relationship. I'm not sure that the media does show enough respect to managers, and I'm absolutely putting us, the Not the Top 20 pod, in this bracket when I say that a large part of our comment on certain clubs, certainly clubs specifically on very bad form, will quite often revolve around a question to do with the manager, the manager's future, and whether or not he will be sacked at some time soon. And when you're in the business of talking about and analysing these leagues on a twice weekly basis, There are certain conversations that need to be had that allow for a certain type of analysis, and that's certainly why there are times where we will discuss the future of a manager. However, I certainly think that there does need to be more respect to managers for the job that they do, for the difficulties of the job that they do. I think that sometimes the analysis of a manager and the media surrounding it can be far too simple, based around a simplification of what a manager's job is and how complicated and complex that role is, often forgetting the human aspect of management, not only what it's like, not only forgetting that managers themselves are humans just like the rest of us and have the same sort of fears and motivations as we do, but also their role and their remit in terms of getting the most out of a group of 25 adult men in the case of the EFL, and how characters and personalities and psychology can make such a big difference. So I do think that there could be a little bit more respect shown to managers and to the job that they have to do. And certainly on occasion, or perhaps quite regularly, there is headlines or conversations that will provoke headlines about, for example, the sacking of a manager that might take priority over a proper insight of what's going on.
That was Ali Maxwell from Not the Top 20 podcast, providing us with some absolutely brilliant insight into life in the Football League and coverage of the Football League.
Thank you for listening to our episode of Journalism Today. We hope you enjoyed. See you next time.